Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Brain Pops. This is our, let's call it our little anniversary because it's episode 25. And of course, I would like to say hello. My name is Dominic Theodoro and I'm saying hi from the beautiful city of Bamberg. And obviously, I would also like to welcome the true stallion of this podcast, the guy who usually almost always takes our breath away, the perfect imperfection. This is Lennart Stechmann. Lennart, how's it hanging?
Hey Dom, thanks for the kind introduction. Like always, I don't want to say too much to whatever you're stating in the introduction about me, but I'm very happy to be here, and also big welcome to our listeners, the Poppies. We're excited to bring a new episode to you guys, and I'm ready to get some new brain pops.
Before we get this show on the road, Lennart, I have to admit, I think the idea of doing that every 2 weeks suits me good. Because I'm really excited for this episode to start. I don't know, how about you? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I like it too. The more time we have in between, the more I, of course, miss you.
Thanks.
And the better we can like choose, or we have more freedom for like to meet our guests. Like in 2 weeks, it's way easier to set up a time with our guests than in 1 week, where we basically just had Sunday or Monday, and now we're really like easy going on the time schedule basically.
Yeah, let's see if we can live up the expectations. Lennart, let's just get the show on the road. I would like to welcome today an international basketball.
First, who was he nominated by?
He was nominated by Julian Meyer. He's a international basketball scout. His name is Francesco Cavalli, and he works for the Washington Wizards. Francesco, I'm excited. Hello, Francesco.
Hey, ciao, guys. How are you? Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. First of all, are you also a puppy, Francesco? Have you listened to maybe one or two, or maybe even more of our episodes?
Oh yeah, I mean, of course, like I don't understand anything about the ones, you know, in German, but I've listened to a couple of the ones in English. You know, Michael Stockton, Khalid El Amin. So yeah, I am a supporter of Brain Pops.
Nice.
That's good to hear.
That's very good to hear, Francesco. Basketball scout. I think everybody has heard about scouts before, but if you ask me, I think not a lot of people really know what scouts are doing. But before we start diving into this topic, just pick us up. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and maybe how did it happen that you are a basketball scout now? Just give us a little outline.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know how it happened. it was really random, actually. I started to just follow basketball games by myself, and slowly I tried to, you know, find a platform where I could say something, you know, about what I was watching, just because I liked it so much to watch and talk about players and so on. I started with some articles here in Italy on some amateur website. I was lucky enough, you know, a friend of mine, a journalist, noticed those, and he told me, in his opinion, I was good, which he doesn't say much because he doesn't know much about like scouting and anything, but at least like he say I have some friends who are looking for some help, you know, to let's say dive deep into the world of, you know, all these 1,000 players they're getting. Of course, like we're talking about basketball friends, and he put me basically in touch with my first pro first connection in pro basketball, let's say. I started to help this head coach from a top division club in, like, you know, just for free, just basically going through names and trying to at least not saying who are the good ones, but at least be able to say who are the bad ones, in my opinion. And from there, it kind of took off a little bit. I started to go around some events. And the big turnaround was when I joined EuroHops. It's a website in Europe. It's like probably the top scouting service for European youth basketball. I joined as a regional collaborator at first in 2015. They just lost Luca Virgilio, who is now a director of basketball operations at Nebraska. So when Luca went to USA, they needed someone in Italy. I joined. I stayed there 1 year as a collaborator, and then my boss was hired by a team, and he asked me to take over the service. So basically, those 3 years at EuroHops was what really helped me to you know, come where I am now. I ran the service for 3 years, covering all youth basketball all over Europe. I was around all possible events in Europe, USA, anywhere, you know. And then, you know, happened that the Wizards asked me to join the team exactly 1 year ago, more or less. So here I am.
And talking about EuroHops, we have to make a distinction there, because there's a well-known website out there. It's called EuroHops. Can you elaborate on EuroHops a little bit? So what was your primary task there? Is that are NBA teams, for example, inquiring about players, about good players in Europe, about prospects? Or what was the real task of EuroHops?
Yes, so first of all, yeah, the distinction between EuroHops and EuroHoops is very important, because it's still, I spent like 4 years in total at EuroHops, and all the time people were mixing it up with EuroHoops, which it was not the case, of course. So mm-hmm. EuroHoops was strictly about scouting, youth scouting, and yeah, basically it works as a scouting service, so based on subscriptions, like whoever wants to get the information on the service has to subscribe. And of course, in that case, mm-hmm. they receive all the information. EuroHops was born as a service, let's say, for pro teams, and multiple NBA teams subscribe over the years. My strike of luck was that when I took over and I ran the service for 3 years, my boss, you know, the guy who was there before me, just started the NCAA service. So he started to steer the service more towards giving information to colleges about, you know, the European players they wanted to recruit. So, mm-hmm. and I was lucky because I was watching so much NCAA in the past few years. I really went deep into all the Division I games. So I was lucky enough, you know, that I had to deal with a world that I kind of knew already quite well. So those 3 years was a lot of trying to project kids from Europe to the college level and trying to connect with as many coaches as possible to help them, steer them in the right direction when they want to offer a scholarship to a European player.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so you're, let's, I have to think about the question first a little bit. What is your...
I got a quick one maybe.
Oh yeah, go ahead.
If you want to rephrase it in your mind.
Yeah.
So earlier you said, Francesco, I have to tell them about the good ones or like tell them about the bad ones. What do you do more on the regular basis?
Oh, for sure. Like, for sure, I would say that most of the job is about cutting names off a list, you know? You have a list of names.
Mm. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, most of the times you have to say this player is not good enough, then this player is good. Just because, of course, we're talking about every level. I have the luck, you know, to have worked at, like, different levels, you know, from over the years, helping some pro teams in Europe, helping colleges, helping an NBA team now. So, but at every level, the case is always that the decision makers have a list of names which is way bigger than the names they actually want. So happens way more often that you have to say this player is not good enough. And again, it does not depend from the level we are talking about. It depends at every level, in my opinion. So yeah, definitely more.
Oh, that's interesting.
Definitely, I would say way more saying who are the not good enough ones, which doesn't mean that they're just not good players. You know, maybe they just are not a fit, or, you know, or they have like issues like who are behind the basketball qualities. So but still, yeah, this is what it is.
Okay, and yeah, I mean, your job implies a lot of observing, of course, but for the people out there, or the listeners, the puppies, how does a regular day, how does that look for you? I mean, I think it implies a lot of traveling, right? It's because you actually want to see them rather live. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, seeing a player live, it's completely different than seeing, you know, on video. So it's incredibly important to travel and to watch players in person. So yeah, traveling is one of the most, you know, if you don't like to travel, that scouting is not for you. I mean, of course, like nowadays, who doesn't like to travel? I mean, but again, like sometimes it can be really, you know, demanding. I had some stretches during the Eurohopes in particular when I had to travel way more just because I was running the show of Eurohopes, that, you know, traveling was really nonstop. And as soon as I came home for like 2 days, I was like, finally. So yeah, traveling for sure. But not only, of course, you have to still to be able to watch videos and be updated, just because, of course, you cannot watch everything live. So yeah, for sure, to answer your question, yeah, traveling is a big part of the job, of course.
And if you let's say you decide you want to watch a player, do you then have to, I don't know, do you have to call the team first that you're coming, or do you also make surprising visits?
It depends. Usually, you know, in the NBA, you most of the times, so you know where you want to go and you just tell the team, so you can introduce yourself. You can, you know, ask questions sometimes, you know, it's just easier, in my opinion, like to just tell the team you're coming, and no one is going to have issues with that most of the times. Can happen that you want to watch a player and you don't want to be, you know, to be not to be seen, because in the end, you know, everyone will see you. You know, it's not like you are in a dark room by yourself. But yeah, let's say, yeah, so it can happen, let's say, that you just want to go and not be announced. But most of the times, I would say, just call the team and say, hey, I'm coming.
Do you prefer watching games, or also, I think you also watch practices, right?
Yes, actually, I think, I mean, of course, I prefer to watch games in some ways, but I think practices says a lot that games cannot say. So basically, I always try to mix it up and watch, particularly for the top prospects, to watch for sure practices and games. Yeah, and I think it's a totally different environment, and how the player answers to certain stimulation in practice is something you cannot get from the game.
There are two questions that come to my mind listening to you. And the first one was, like, both kind of aim at the little, in the business world, you would call it maybe soft skills. I don't know if this is the right, or the mentality of a player, or however you want to call it. Like, what is different for you when you watch a player live? Like, what do you look for compared to watching him maybe on TV or something?
Well, first of all, even just the pace of the game, the speed, it's totally different in person. You get better feel of how the athleticism, the body is, which is, these are the first two things you scout, basically, always. Not first, like, necessarily in terms of importance, but in terms of, you know, temporary. You know, you just enter in the gym, even before a player starts to warm up, you scout the body. You see, okay, the player's, wow, this body is good, this body is not, you know, and yes, no, why? So, and in person is a totally different perspective, of course. And then, yes, you can catch a little small things that on video goes unnoticed. How he behaves, the body language, interaction with teammates, coaches, referees, opponents. And also, like, even what he does, you know, when the game stops, when the game ends, before the game starts. So yeah, it's totally different. And in general, I think also, you know, you have to consider that when you watch a game on video, you are not always you don't always get the best quality. I know that you in Germany are used to, like, to have a very good quality in your games, but that does not happen for all leagues. So this is also a big factor.
Mm. Oh, okay. Yeah. And when you look for, like, the, let's call it the little stuff, I don't know if you can say this live, but I would guess yes. If not, no problem. Like, do you have any red flags that come up when you, like, watch a player and you see him doing this or acting, behaving, looking like this or something, that you're immediately like, okay, I could go now?
That's a very good question. I guess for players it's the same as with people. You know, there's some stuff that you don't like, even, you know. So of course there's some evident stuff, some evident demeanor that you really just example is better. Like, if player goes crazy after a call he thinks is bad, then it's definitely a big red flag. But in general, there are a lot of small things I like to watch, even smaller things like that. For example, how the player behaves to a teammate after teammate mistakes. You know, that's something small, maybe doesn't always get noticed, but for scouts, that's really important for everyone, you know, not just for me. So, yeah, I wouldn't say that's something that brings me, you know, to just leave, because that's something, I mean, I guess no one does. I never do it. I don't just leave just because of some behavior issue or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of little stuff. I don't like, I think the body language towards your coach and your teammates is one of the most important things.
Mm. Dom, we got to get a soundtrack for a Brain Pop alert or something, because I think that was very, for me, I load this up with a lot of importance. The thing you said about, like, how do players behave when others make a mistake? Because I think that's something really, really big for the team culture on a team. Like, if you know, how do other players behave when you make a mistake? Are you scared then of making mistakes? So I think that was for any poppies listening, playing basketball, I think that's one really, really big brain pop for everybody, not just in basketball. In business world, in any other sport, your reaction to mistakes of others could be very, have a very huge impact.
Yeah, I would like to add to this. This is also, this goes also into the direction that everything basically matters. Everything on the court matters, and this is, I think that fits perfectly in that. So I also agree with Leonard that this is a big one. Francesco, I think you almost touched on it. But while I was thinking about this episode, I was like, are there, like, any non-negotiables you look for in a player? Is there, like, anything that needs to be there? I mean, you said earlier that first thing you scout is the body, the athleticism, but also the body language. But is there maybe something that even stands out more?
Oof. You mean just from a basketball standpoint?
Yeah, let's say from a basketball standpoint first.
Well, nowadays, you know, one of the first, I mean, probably, the first thing you notice is the body athleticism. Like, second is probably, you know, how a player shoots. That's key in today's game. So I would say, again, it's something you start to watch maybe before the game starts, you know, where in warm-ups and how the shot comes out and stuff like this. I don't know if you want to hear anything, like, more specific.
It's probably also tough for you to answer, because, you know, it also depends on the team you are working for, what the team looks for, you know. So maybe it's not that easy to define that there's some.
But we can have a try. I can cut it off if it just sucks. So no pressure.
Of course, like, it depends a lot from the position a player plays, or, like, the team you're scouting for. Again, like as was saying, like in my years as a scout, I scouted for different levels, so that changes a lot. Right now, scouting for the NBA, I think it's completely different than anything else. So, for example, like right now is almost non-negotiable for a player to be able to shoot to play in the NBA. For in most positions he plays, like it's not even just about backcourt players, but it's more and more also about frontcourt players. Of course, like I think in the end, scouting is like building a model for yourself. So you have to have clear in your mind what you're looking for, what are the non-negotiable things. But in the end, your goal is to find the outlier of that model. So the players who are as good, that good, that even if they don't fit the model, they are going to be successful. I mean, for example, how many times have you heard of players who are like, I don't know, I'm going to do an example, like Luka Doncic, he's not athletic, he's not like explosive for the NBA. Because again, in a guard, in a backcourt player in the NBA, the common model is to look for athleticism and explosiveness. In that sense, Luka Doncic transcends the model. You know, it's an outlier because it's not like what you would expect in an NBA guard, but you don't, you know, it's that good that you don't care. You know, it does not need to fit the model. It's just too good for the model. So, yeah, in general, I think there are a lot of non-negotiable stuff. Shooting probably is the first one that comes to my mind. But the difficult thing is that even if you find a player who cannot shoot or cannot fit your non-negotiable qualities, it doesn't mean that it's a player you have to trash, you know.
Understand. So would you say that there is then also a trade-off? Let's say you have a player, he has really high basketball IQ, he can pass the ball, he can rebound, but he cannot really shoot. Would you take that then as a trade-off, for example? But again, I think it depends again on what you're looking for, huh? For the team.
Yes, yes.
I was about to say that. Yeah.
And again, I think it depends a lot, like from how many things the player does at a high level, how many elite skills he has. Like Draymond Green. You would expect like a power forward in the NBA to be a knockdown shooter, but he's so good in so many other things that it doesn't matter. You can easily trade off his shooting for whatever else he does. To answer your question, like I don't know if I can answer. Yeah, like, it's so much a case by case. Like I think for sure there are trade offs. So that's why you never really you can never be sure about cutting a name off. At first, you know, because you have to be. I don't know. I'll give you another example, like Boban Marjanović does not fit in any model of a modern NBA big man. Probably, like if you, I would say. I mean, of course, like I cannot know like all possible models for everyone, but like I would say that most teams in the NBA expect a big man to be totally different than Boban Marjanović, but he's so good that you just trade off, you know. You just take him, even if he has, even if he has some different qualities than what you would expect from an NBA big man. So, yeah, it's a job of trade offs. In the end, you know, it just depends from how good the player is at the other things, or how well can he fit in a, like, even off the court, you know, we go back to what we are talking before, like, in a culture, in a system, in a certain environment. So, yeah, I would say yes, but I cannot really tell you which one is a trade, can be a trade or not.
Yeah.
So one question there is, of course, one big part of your job is to evaluate player. I don't know if you're get along with that word, but on the other side, you also like you basically have to scout the team you're scouting for, right? So how big of a role does that play? I'm guessing right now a very big one, which I was not aware before this podcast because I've never thought about it before. Like,
I would say yes in general, but I would say also that this applies more to non-NBA scouting. Because in the NBA, you're always looking for everything and you're always looking at every player, you know. Particularly, you know, at my for a European scout, you know, when you're not the decision maker, you have to focus on European players. Most of the times, you just go based on talent, you know. So it doesn't really matter what your team's what your team need now, because you still have to be, you know, tomorrow your team may need some different stuff. It's not like when you're talking about scouting in Europe, that's different, because you make the roster in the summer, you know which pieces you want, and you are building a roster considering that you're going to have the same players for one season, and then you have to start over, most of the time start over from, you know, next season. Of course, like not totally, like for the most part. So there you have to know which kind of team you want to build and what you expect for one season. And also in Europe, you're usually, if the scout is closer to the decision maker, which does not happen in the NBA. The scout is far from the decision maker. So I would say, I agree with what you're saying, with your point. I think it applies way more to non-NBA scouting.
Okay, so in the past, you've been working with Johan Rojakas a lot. He's been, let's say, oftentimes a topic on this podcast. And, how much do you, like, rephrasing my question from earlier, like, how you probably know Johan's system very well. It's like, for example, the times in Göttingen, the way of basketball he played. So do you look at players like, oh, this player might not be interesting for anybody, but I know Johan loves this type of stuff. So you just kind of, like, this idea pops up in your mind. You're like, hey, Johan, look at this one. Or how can we imagine you working together with decision makers like Johan?
Oh, yes, for sure. 100%. And this not, you know, this doesn't work only for, like, Johan. Even in the business, you always interact, like, with GM, sport director. So sometimes they ask you, like, what do you think of this player? For everyone who asks me an opinion has done it in the past, I always say that this player is good, but it's not for you. Or, like, check this player, you like him. I think it's normal. Actually, the more you know a person, like I'm knowing Johan for years, the more you know which players can fit his style or, like, even his character and so on. And I think in the early years knowing Johan, I think I did more mistakes than in my latest years, you know, because I didn't know him that well, and I was more judging about what I liked and not what I knew was.
And so how much are you in touch then with players?
It depends. The point is that when you scout, you don't really you're not a decision maker. So I was never a decision maker in Europe. I'm not a decision maker now. So it's not like, it was never like my duty, you know, to deal with players, to, I don't know, like, deal with the agents or players. Like, my the job of a scout is to advise the team of what's the opinion, you know. And so, you know, I never really had to deal with players, and having so much, you know, this job takes away so much time and energy that you don't really have that much time to do stuff that you don't really need. So, of course, like, I know some players, like, my timing during my years in Göttingen, I was always dealing a lot with all the team when I came to visit the team in Germany, but it's not something. It's not something you're looking for. You know, you're not actively trying to deal with players. It can happen, and I have some players that now I'm very good friend with. But it was not something I was looking for.
Okay.
How do you come to decide if a player has all the tools, let's say, for a particular team? Do you work with checklists or something like that, or is it most of the time also just like gut feeling?
Gut feeling, I would say, most of the time. I mean, again, you have to have a sort of checklist, if not written, just in your mind, you know, what you, you know, knowing what you're looking for. And again, go back and talking about trade-offs, when you are, I mean, we are talking now about scouting for a European team again, which is totally different than the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say for a European team, like can be, you know, Göttingen or Bamberg or, I don't know, Bayern Munich or whatever. So the roster, you don't sign all players at the same time, you know. You start with one player and then you have second and third. So at some point you come to the point where that cannot be a trade-off, because if you need shooting at a position because you don't have shooting in other positions, then you know you cannot trade that off, you know. So, yeah, it's a gut feeling, but at the same time you have to have checklists and know, okay, what do we need now at this position? You know, it's shooting, or can we trade off shooting if you want a little bit more defense? Like this summer, I had a discussion with a friend of mine, which is a coach in Europe, and he was like, you know, I want this player because I need defense. And my opinion was like, I think you need more someone who can scoring 20 points for you, you know, can create his own shot and defense there. And I would, so in our discussion, I was prioritizing, let's say, scoring, and he was prioritizing defense. So we had two different checklists, let's say, in our mind. And in the end, of course, like I'm never too hard, you know, because in the end. The coach or the sport director are the ones, you know, who put their face to sign a player, you know. If I had just to give advice, and not, it's too easy to not, you know, to not be the person who in the end takes the decision and puts the face on it. So in the end, I usually drop it.
So you're basically sometimes discussing with coaches or sports directors or whoever what they need for their team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, in this business, at some point, having so many friends who are like coaches or squad directors, you just talk a lot about players and they ask your opinion. Like, and of course, like you come to the discussion when you're saying my opinion is this one and the other one has a different opinion. But in the end, what I was saying is that I'm in a easy position, because in that situation, I'm just talking as a friend to someone who actually is putting his neck on the line for the job. So, yeah, I mean, I can say that I think my opinion is the right one. But in the end, if I'm wrong, I don't lose the job. He loses the job. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, happens. You know.
So do you catch yourself rooting for some players or even teams? Like, because, you know, like maybe they listen to you a lot and then you're like, oh boy.
That's a very good question.
I hope they perform now.
That's a very good question. No, I mean, I don't really feel the pressure of players or teams need to perform. Of course, like there's some players I like that I just like how they play, and or maybe it was a very good suggestion from my part that I like if they do well. But like it's not what I'm thinking. The point is that in this job you can never be always right. Everyone is right and everyone is wrong. Mm. So
yeah.
If you take too personally the times you're wrong, you cannot do the job, you know. Happens and you just move on. So if someone doesn't perform well, I'm like, damn, I was wrong, and you just move on. Mm-hmm. So no, I don't really root. I would say I root more like for friends, like but for their careers, like Johan is a friend. I want him to be successful, and or like everyone else, like I talk with as a friend. You know, it's just I'm just happy for them. And if they are good, going against my decision, my opinion. Sorry, so they take a decision which goes against what I was saying. Better.
Okay. Well, Dom, there's one question that I read in your notes about making a good decision on Francesco's part. Maybe you want to shoot that.
Making a good decision. Really? You read that in my notes?
I'm about to steal it if you don't come up with it.
Go ahead, steal it.
Francesco, was there a player that you discovered, like who made it to like a like that you, yeah, I don't know, like you let's say you found a diamond in the rough, and somebody that really just went through the roof.
Well, I mean, I think with Göttingen, we had some good strikes with Scott Edgerton was the first one. He was coming from second division in Italy, and Derek Willis for sure. I'd say that probably that the biggest one is one of the stories that I liked to tell the most. Actually, whoever from basketball is going to listen to this podcast has probably heard this story already like thousands of times, and they were probably skipping ahead, say, no, damn, again, the story of Alfonso McKinney. So, yeah, it was Alfonso McKinney probably when a friend of mine signed him in Luxembourg second division, because I saw him in Las Vegas in one of the workouts in the morning doing Las Vegas for agencies. And my friend in Luxembourg second division was just newly promoted to third division. By the way, my friend is now the head coach of Arantxa, is Christoph Ney. So with Eastside Pirates, he needed a one player for like very low money. And I was lucky enough to just see Alfonso McKinney playing in Las Vegas. And he was coming from a, let's say, average season at Green Bay, 9 points per game, something like that. And he was fitting the profile. I told him, in my opinion, it was a good signing. And then we went back and forth. It's not that he signed him right away. We went back and forth talking about the player for like a couple of weeks. And then he signed Alfonso McKinney. And, you know, Alfonso McKinney and ended up being Mexico, then three on three in the USA, then G League, and then the NBA. He played an NBA final with the Warriors. So, yeah, probably that was the biggest diamond in the rough, which, again, I never thought he would have been an NBA player. I mean, I thought he would have been a very good player for Luxembourg second division and probably a higher level. I mean, after that season, I told a friend of mine who was coaching in Switzerland, hey, this kid is very good, and it was whistling. I thought he could have moved up in Europe. To go to the NBA, I would have never thought it, honestly.
Interesting. And what about the opposite? Was there ever a player you thought, oh man, this guy is going to be big time, and then he didn't do anything?
Yes, of course there was. I don't know if I can say the name, just because probably the player is still active.
Throw him under the bus.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to throw him under the bus, but yeah, definitely there were like times where I was really high on someone, and then he ended up doing nothing. Actually, there are a couple of friends of mine who still remind me. You know, that's how we do. You know, among scouts, you know, that's some very good friends. We go at it.
In your opinion, when you, like, you don't have to say a name, obviously, but when you see players where that happens, where you had your hopes really high, or and then they, for some reason, cannot perform to the level or to the potential you thought they had, what are, like, do you have some reasons in your mind why that didn't happen?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first thing, I think. The first thing you try to do is to understand why you were wrong, and so that you can avoid doing the same mistake, but at least keeping your mistake into account when you take the next decision. Not that you make this, let's say, you say again your opinion the next time. So yeah, I mean, again, I think it's really important not to take them personally. There's no one is always right, you know. So just try to analyze why that didn't work. If it was on the court, off the court, bad fit, or just bad play, and then you just move on.
What I like in general, things that usually come to your mind then when you think about this type of stuff, like just maybe one or two examples that pop up to your mind right now.
You mean a reason for a player to fail?
Yeah, maybe not reaching his potential. Okay. Like, I don't know if that's failing right away or like, yeah, maybe not maximizing his potential. Do you see any general reasons there, or is that just always so individual that you cannot really make statements here?
No, yeah, I would say, again, I think it's very different from NBA or Europe. I would say, though, that off-court issues are, of course, stuff which doesn't need to be bad stuff necessarily, but just a player does not fit a certain culture or a certain league. So I would say that accounts for most, let's say, mistakes. But also bad fit with a coach, I would say that's something that happens quite often. And of course, like, I'm not even talking about injuries or like rookie mistakes. You know, that some players were terrible as rookies, and then they picked up the different, you know, the different game, different culture, and they were very good later. So I don't, those are two, like, that can happen, and it's something you cannot control. What you can control, at least know about, it's again on the court and off the court. And again, know very well the coach or team or sport director you are working for or you are helping, and try to find the best fit possible.
Mm-hmm. Francesco, what's more important, good stats or being a good guy?
Being a good guy.
Player-wise.
Being a good guy. I mean, stats, everyone loves stats, but if you're not a good guy, you cannot even put up stats because you're going to be cut. So.
True. That's amazing, yeah? I mean, and if you look at it, I mean, you would probably say, yeah, I mean, if this guy has good stats, he must be probably a good fit. But being a good guy, I mean, it comes from you. Yeah, it's way more important.
Even so, being a good guy can have multiple, like, say, you can see the things from many different angles. Like, you can talk with someone and tell you, oh, this guy is great. And you can tell with some other ones, the same guy, and say, this guy is trash, you know, off mm-hmm. the court. So it depends also, you know, again, it's very important to know who are you scouting for and know which is the level of tolerance or which is the city the team is, which you also see is very important, you know, or like, you know, depends on what, you know, what's to do off the court, let's say. If you are in Bamberg, probably you have like less stuff, stuff to do than you are in Milano. Yeah, even that's to say that even like for off-court issues, there are many different angles you can see a player. And of course, like some players are bad off the court under all the possible angles. So that's easy.
And they're also probably coaches or decision makers or whoever have different, measurements on what's, let's call it, bad off the court and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I was saying. You know, you can talk with someone and this guy's going to tell you, oh, this guy is great. And maybe the day after you talk with someone else, maybe even within the same team, he's going to tell you, oh, this guy is terrible. Mm-hmm. So,
okay.
This opens a whole new topic about the importance of getting right informations and talking to the right people and which informations you can trust and not, but that's we can write a book about this, so too long.
Yeah. And referring to Dom's question, maybe like a good stats or a good guy, do all the coaches think like that you work with or that not? No, let's remind that not that you work with in general. When you think about coaches, is that something
that's
like everywhere now, or do you still?
No. That's some guy. A lot of people like, I don't care what this guy do when he gets out of the gym or even in the gym. Like some players like are terrible in practice, but coaches don't care. You know, as long as they win games and save jobs. You know, in the end, you know. The goal is always to save the job. That's sad to say, in today's sport, that's you have to save the job.
Okay, I have one question for you. I'm not sure if it's a tough one, I think. So if we're talking about players' potential, and let's say we live in a wonder world or whatever, and you could change a thing or two in the basketball business, what would you change in order to like make it easy for players to perform at their maximum potential?
Oof, that's a very good question. Can I pass this question? It's too deep for me. Like
it's a tough. Like, would you just erase the money, basically? Does that do the trick already?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think you're raising money you would solve the problem. You would probably have the same problems on a different scale. It's not like NBA is so much money. Like, it's not like there's no problems there, you know. So, no, I would say like raising the money is not really what would solve the question. But, you know, it's probably, it's a very good question. And you really caught me off guard here. I don't have an answer.
Yeah, it's. I just came up with it, so I don't have an answer either. Okay. I was just wondering, maybe.
That's a good one, though. You should do it until everyone comes to the podcast, and just just catch everyone off guard like you did with me.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe in a couple of episodes we have some more. Maybe thoughts or ideas about this. We'll see.
Francesco, in the pre-show, you told me that you know, 4 or 5 years ago, if I look back, I probably didn't have a clue about basketball. And now you're where you are. You are where you are. Are there like maybe you have one, two lessons for us that you would like to share? In terms of what you've learned throughout your career as being a scout.
That's another very good question. I was saying the point was definitely that compared to 5 years ago, I'm a totally different point than I was before. And actually 5 years ago, I was really at a totally different point than I was 10 years ago. So, I mean, it's, I think there are like tons of things. You never stop learning in this job. And I think it's always important to approach in this way that you're not, you don't have like, you are changing and the game is changing too. So, and the players are changing. Mm-hmm. But maybe a player, you know, very well, just had it for 10 years and he stops playing. And so my point is that, of course, like first, it's very basic rule. Never think to be at a point where you have to stop learning or you can, let's say, sit down.
I think you reached that point by being on this podcast.
Yeah, I know. And that tomorrow I just quit and I retire.
I think it's safe to say you made it.
No, actually, something a very like simple concept that a coach here in Italy told me, Renato Pasquale, is now a sport director in Forlì, told me only who has seen a lot of players can understand who are the good ones. So I always try to, I'm kind of perfectionist in what I do. Like I try to watch the most possible players on level, even if I don't really need to, you know, like there's a lot of leagues and players that you don't really want to watch because it's too low probably or whatever. But if I have the chance and I can afford in terms of energy and time, I always try to be updated on even on like stuff I don't do now, like I don't cover now. Easy example, mm-hmm. like now as an NBA scout in Europe, I don't have to watch college basketball. No one is requiring me. Maybe towards the end of the season, they are going to ask me to watch some games and maybe send me to America to watch some games. So it can happen. But like your day-to-day job is to follow European players. You don't have to day-to-day task to follow college basketball. But I still try to do it because you never know. Like, first of all, you have a feel of what's happening there and which players are coming up, you know, for NBA or USA. Maybe you start to build your picture. This player is for the NBA, this player is for Europe. And then again, after like a couple of years, you check back and see why you were right or why you were wrong. And at the same time, again, basketball is not a safe business. You cannot be sure where you are tomorrow. So I think it's always important to survive in this business, to be the most possible updated about the most possible things, because you never know what you're going to do then the next season, let's say.
So this episode will air on, is it already this week Wednesday, Dom?
No, next week Wednesday.
Then this question doesn't make any sense. Well, or maybe it does. Do you already know what games you're going to watch next week Wednesday?
Next Wednesday? No, I have no idea.
Yeah, okay. So what games are you going to watch tonight? Or are you still going to watch any games tonight?
Yeah, possibly. Honestly, I don't know. I have like a couple of college games I want to watch, but from the past season, but I didn't really decide yet. I have like kind of a, I don't know, folder with like tons of games I download that I know I want to watch, but I leave them for later, let's say. So I just open the folder and I pick one game.
Okay, so you don't always watch them live. Yeah,
no,
probably
actually,
makes sense because you can skip through them a lot faster, right?
Actually, I prefer, like, if I cannot watch a game in person, I usually prefer to not watch it live, just because time is such a important thing that you cannot really. I prefer, you know, just to have a game already cut already without, you know, be able to skip all the stops, all the like timeouts, so the take me the least time possible to watch it.
Francesco, I think we haven't really talked about that yet, and maybe that's something that might be really interesting for our puppies. Just give us an example. How does a regular day look for you? Whew. I mean, you watch a lot of video, but you know, just maybe just an example.
I don't have a regular day, so you know. But as an example, it depends. It really depends from the assignments I have maybe in a certain period, but let's say I always try to watch at least 2 games per day, even if I'm traveling. Maybe if it's about waking up earlier and watch a game in the hotel before leaving, or even like stay awake more after you already watch a game live, to watch one more game on video. When I'm not traveling, I just usually wake up, watch a game, then maybe you just try to stay away from the computer a little bit, maybe work on a database a little bit, but not on the computer, or just try to, I don't know, go through your old notes and try to put them together, or maybe make some calls. Like, there's a lot of calls. Like, you have to enjoy staying at the phone as much as you like, as you have to enjoy to travel. So there's not really a set schedule, I would say. I usually try to. I think it's important, you know, just to not to stay too many hours on video, on watching games on video. I usually don't watch games in a row if I cannot put something in the middle, like, which is even, you know, just doing something totally different, like non-basketball related for like half an hour, or just maybe work on a different league, different player with old notes and just try to put them together and put out a decent, like a nice looking report, you know. To sum it up, I would say I try to watch games in the morning, games in the evening, and try to use the central part of the day, you know, to do maybe if I have to do non-basketball stuff, or if I have to make some calls or write reports or be on work on database or stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay. And so basically, or one question I wrote down is, does your, let's call it task or job, end if a team signs a player, or like how much do you still stay involved?
In the NBA, you're not really, like, you don't stay involved, like, and again, as I was saying before, like, you're always looking for everything, so your task, you never really end the task. We can see, like, a task ending maybe with a draft, but you're already working before there's one draft, you're already working for the one after it. So it's kind of difficult to set the timeline, let's say, when some task ends and another starts, because usually you have like more tasks at the same time. And the fact that team signs a player is not really affecting you at all. So, of course, like, you're not going to scout that player anymore. Like, again, I'm not scouting usually the players who are already in the NBA, because my focus has to be in Europe. So if... I'm not sure quite. There's totally different scouts who do that, you know, pro scouts in USA or like. So, yeah, I would say, yeah, definitely. Like, if a player signs a team, it's usually not my task anymore.
It's crazy how often we kind of touched already on this, that like how different it is to scout for NBA and for Europe. even though it seems like, hey, it's the same sport, so why would there be so majorly differences? But the leagues are just set up so differently, right? That's probably what makes the whole... And the game is so different too, yeah? That's something I didn't quite have in mind before.
Yeah, and yeah.
One big brain pop.
To answer your question, from a European perspective, you never really stop scouting a player. Because the same player, maybe you have to be in a position to renew it or to sign back like 3 years after. Or as a player you want to sign with a different team, you still have to scout him. Maybe you have to sign next season. So that's totally different, totally different perspective. And that's probably, I would say, toughest job than the one I do now.
Hmm. And again, maybe the perspective on Europe again. Sometimes during the seasons, there are like players get kicked out or other stuff happens. How does your job change during the season versus off season? I'm imagining it's probably a lot more time consuming in the off season, but I'm not quite sure.
So this is a very good question, because it has been my first year in the NBA, and this off season has been, there's not been an off season yet, basically, because of COVID and all the rest. Mm. So I don't have the perspective from inside as an NBA scout, because again, my first year in the NBA was, there was a global pandemic. So I don't know if that means something, but anyway, looking for, from the job from outside, let's say in my past years at the EuroHoops, I would say that NBA scouts, in the off season, you're so busy following the FIBA tournaments, which are must watch for most scouts, that you don't really, you start the off season when those are over. But I would say that the most busy time, let's say, it's actually during the season, before the draft. So let's say, and at the end of the season, let's say probably April, March, April, May, and then of course June with the draft.
Okay. And Europe, any difference there?
Europe is all about the off season. If you are a scout, okay. Technically, that's actually tricky, because I think the best job is always done by the ones who scout during the whole season. And actually a big issue today is in European basketball is that teams are cutting their management and try to pay the least possible people. In the end, you end up being a coach and a GM making a team, but at the same time, they have to coach and they have to take care of sponsors. And, guys, you are in Germany, you're kind of in an easier situation most of the times, let's say, but it can be really sometimes people in the management have so many things to do, they can only start making a roster like in June when they start receiving emails from the agent, watching highlights. So I would say that in Europe is definitely more off-season oriented, but also because it's really difficult to find someone who can afford having a scout or a sport director which is devoted to scouting. We can care about scouting most of his time. So that's the issue, I would say. So yeah, that's definitely more off-season oriented, but just because the resources are not the ones who are the NBA. There's not many scouts or many teams who can have a scout in Europe.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Oh man, I have so many notes written down while I was listening, talking to you. So many possible names for the episode. It's ridiculous. It's a lot of stuff you dropped, Francesco.
Yeah, I really liked it too. I really loved having you on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
And like I told you already, Leonard, if that's okay with you, we always ask our guests for a nomination, and you had time to think about it. Is there somebody you would like to nominate?
That's an easy one. It's a German podcast, so you have to have best German scouts talking with you guys. So Zimon Jajc, she's a, I think, is a brilliant mind, very good scout, and for sure the best scout in Germany also, because there's not that many scouts from Germany, I have to say.
Okay. What was his name again? Zimon Jajc?
Jajc, yes. Yes, I can text you later the name, and you can, I text you the number so you can reach out to him.
Okay.
Ooh. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, very, yeah. Very good one.
He's like way better than me. So, you know, you're going to have a better podcast with him.
No, you were brilliant, Francesco. I really liked it.
Thank you, guys. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Dom, any other stuff we need to tell our, listeners, puppies, anything that I forget?
No, I think we all good.
Yeah, sounds good. So, again, thank you very much, Francesco. I had a lot of fun during this episode. I hope the puppies had some brain pops. And, I will say see you guys soon. And, thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.